Dragon spacecraft did not crash in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947.
You know flat earthers, I guarantee it. But you don't know who they are because they're afraid of talking about it.
This is not a test. This is your emergency broadcast system.
Hello and welcome to the 241st annual Subliminal Perception Podcast, your weekly dose of conspiracy theory bullshit. My name is Cody and my pal Phil. How are you?
Doing good, buddy. How about yourself?
Not doing too bad. Another fun, tantalizing, exciting week at work. How about you?
Yeah, pretty much the same old, same old. I had a pretty good weekend. It was quite an event. Drinking wise, I'd say.
Okay, did that strange man from the bar approach you again?
No, he did not.
He did not.
I was no, I had apparently, well, I'll tell this story as well. Went to watch the Iowa versus Connecticut women's basketball game at Oso. Quite a lot of people watching it there. We did have a situation much like the Big Ten championship game where a band was trying to set up as the game was going on. But this band was actually full of some young guys, and they realized that they were going to get heckled pretty badly if they, you know, started trying to play while the game was on.
Yeah, if you're a small band, it's probably not a good idea to piss off the crowd before you even start.
Definitely. Yeah, especially during that fourth quarter, it was back and forth. A really good game. They would have started during the last 6 minutes of that game. They probably would have gotten, they don't sell bottles, obviously, past, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, but somebody would have found one on the ground and threw it at them. Imagine. Might have been me, actually.
Yeah, you would have thrown it at them. What kind of a band was it? Country?
It was kind of like a hippie, reggae-ish type band.
All right.
White dudes with dreads, basically, could have been their name.
Okay.
Yeah, they it was funny because they got up on stage and immediately were like, oh, how was that game, everybody? And then they started playing. They popped the crowd for the game. But yeah, there was quite a few people who were stuck around to watch them. They were mostly just drinking. We went to Dirk's Bentley Whiskey Row afterwards.
Okay, well, you guys probably just said, hey, guys, go smoke another couple doobies, come back in 10 minutes and play your show.
It was funny. So my sister was coming back from the bathroom and she walked by them as they were kind of like walking towards the stage. And she overheard one of the guys in the band say, we can't go on till this game's over or the crowd will kill us. So I imagine.
Hey, at least they were self-aware.
Yeah, they weren't like those old farts who were looking all pissy at the crowd who were trying to watch the Big Ten championship game, Iowa versus Michigan.
So. I got a short rant for you because I know you are a rant person, right?
Yeah.
I usually don't have any, but this week I do. So I finally got a new car, right?
Ooh, nice.
And obviously, dealing with a dealership is like the least fucking fun thing you can do, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the series of events happened. I could only pick it up and fill out all the dumb paperwork this one day. Basically, they had to set it up so I could sign stuff electronically, right? And for some reason, they wanted me to talk to this one person first, right? And which I thought was a little weird, but I had a feeling I knew why. And of course, she calls and is like going into the pressuring of buying an extended warranty and shit. And just like, I kept saying no. And she's on and on and on. And I'm like, no, no, no. And she just was like, then she went into the, like trying to guilt trip me into buying it. And I'm like, lady, I'm not fucking buying this goddamn extended fucking warranty. And it's just like, have you ever dealt with that where they just like don't take no for an answer?
Yeah, So one thing that I've learned about the extended warranty seller, it's good when they want to talk to you because that means that you have a good vehicle that's not going to fuck up in the next like 3 to 5 years or very whatever it true. Is, 100,000 miles or something like that. The situation I had with the last car that I am driving right now, I kind of was waiting for them to do the whole extended warranty thing. And when they got to that part, they immediately put a big X on the paper and moved on. And they're like, well, you know, we're selling this so quick. We haven't really had time to look at it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, oh God, this car, it was just over 10 grand. And it was good for the miles and everything. It looked good. But I was thinking to myself, like, ooh, that's not a good sign. So, okay. But yes, during the past, I have bought a new-ish car with less than 50,000 miles. And they definitely were on my nuts about extended warranty.
Okay. Well, I guess you gave me a peace of mind then that...
Maybe. It's not a lemon. Don't worry. Okay. If it was a lemon, she wouldn't have come to the building that day. So.
I know. And of course they're like, the salesman was great. You know, he's like a young dorky kid like us, but, yeah, I think she was like the finance manager or some shit like that. And I'm just like, they want to leave a review and I'm very tempted to be like, oh yeah, the salesman, he was fantastic, but that financial manager was a real bitch and just put that on their fucking review. I'm like tempted to because I was just so annoyed.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably not the first or the last bad review they're going to get for her, but no. It is her job. That's, yeah. I mean,
I know. Really,
that's where all their margins probably are, is getting people to buy, you know, crap that, you know, they don't need or want really. So obviously it's fucking car business.
Yeah. It reminded me that I'm very happy that I do not work in that industry anymore.
Yes. Yeah. So my younger brother used to work as a car salesman and he just didn't have the killer, I'm not killer instinct, the lack of empathy maybe is the best word for it. He was talking about some of the things they wanted him to do. And it's just like, oh my God. Like,
no,
if you're a decent person at all, couldn't imagine.
No, you gotta be real comfortable with knowing you're tricking someone into buying a piece of shit sometimes. Or
Matilda's dad.
Yeah. I could just see your younger brother with that power tool that rewinds the fucking mileage on the car.
I could imagine a customer asking him if it's a good car. Doing the Midwestern thing, yeah. Like the good lads. No.
Can't even hide the expression on your face.
I wouldn't buy it.
No.
Like, flat out tells him.
You know what, though? That's good. He's a... good, honest young man.
Yeah. I had a little bit of get really quick before we jump into this. I had a little bit of an experience with, I was actually called by my student loan company. I haven't been able to get into my account for the past like week and a half. And they called me cause I was like, you know, 8 days overdue or something like that. And basically the lady was doing the security questions with me, asking me like, what's your zip code? Is this your address? What's your email? And then all of a sudden she busts out with, who's your employer? And I'm just like, well, who do you have written down? And she's like, okay, I guess we'll skip that one. It's like, I'm not fucking telling you that. First of all, you don't need to know that. Just know this. I have a job and I'm more than willing to pay you the smallest amount of money I'm required to, you know.
Yeah.
I don't, not paying you anything extra. But it's like, so what? Even if I pay my bills, you can, you know, garnish my wages or talk shit to me or my employer. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless that was one of your security questions. I mean, I feel like it probably wasn't.
I feel like it's one of their things now, probably, to get the employer's name just in case. But I mean, what are they going to call a giant company and say like, oh yeah, one of your low level workers. Way, way, way over here, you know.
No, you should have told him you work for Brazzers.
Pornhub.
Yeah, I work for Pornhub. I am a out of work actor.
I'm a quality control. I'm a quality control specialist for Pornhub, actually, ma'am. Would you like their phone number as well?
1-800 Pornhub. That's what it is. Give them a call.
Send them straight to their fucking client. Their what is that like? Where they, you know, headhunt for actresses, basically.
Yeah.
The casting out situations.
Yeah. are you ready to get into this week's episode, Phil?
Yes. I will say, before we start, I want to give a little bit of warnings. So I am coming down with a cold, so you might notice me sniffling or coughing a little bit, you know? I'm sorry about that. It's just the fucking way it goes. Also, too, I was planning on doing the second, or well, technically third part of the 9/11, but I got shithoused. pretty much I was hungover for the past 5 days.
Yeah.
So I decided I would do a fun little short one. It's a really good time to do it. Obviously, you see what the title is, so you know like what, you know, what this is about. But yeah, so hopefully I can get that one cooked up, ready to go, you know, in a few weeks, but enjoy this for now. So,
all right, let's hear it.
During the past week, millions from around the world have flocked to the United States to see, of course, the Great American Eclipse, which spanned from Texas all the way to Maine. The people were watching in awe as the sun was perfectly blocked out by the passing moon, though throughout history, not all eclipse gazers were as happy for the darkness as their modern-day counterparts, as fear, panic, and trepidation would rule the day during these terrifying celestial events. And that is a topic for today's episode, as we look back at the past mythological traditions and historical significances of solar eclipses.
Excellent. It's funny you are talking about this because I actually, while the eclipse was going on, one of my coworkers was telling me about something that I think you're going to talk about here, of a certain culture and how they felt about the eclipse. But we'll wait till they get there and I can tell you if he was full of shit or not. I don't know about you, but here we were supposed to be able to see something from like 12:50 to like 2 o'clock or something, right?
Yeah.
Cloudy and rainy all day. Zero sun. So it was dark already. We couldn't even fucking tell if anything happened.
Yeah, so my day off was actually Monday. I switched from Fridays off to Mondays off. And that was the day after the big game, and I was taking a big boy nap during the event. So I did not actually get outside to see it. Yeah. I was a little pissed at myself for missing it. But
so
it was a clear day, and we supposedly from here were able to see a decent amount. Not obviously not 100%, but in Arizona, we're supposed to be able to have seen like, you know, quite a bit of coverage. So
yeah, probably more than us. I think they said kind of where we are would have been like maybe 70% of seeing it if we saw a sun that day. But like if it wasn't being talked about, like nobody here would even have an idea that an eclipse happened that day.
Now, to start off the mythology section of today's episode, we are actually going to begin with a culture that is quite near and dear to your heart, Cody, and discuss a little bit of Viking folklore. Now, in Norse mythology, it was said that two wolves, Hati and Skoll, are in a never-ending pursuit of the sun and moon, represented by brother and sister gods, a female chariot rider named Sol, and a male chariot rider named Mani. Nobody is sure exactly which wolf chases which celestial god through the sky, though Snorri Sturluson, a medieval Nordic historian, wrote that Skoll chased the moon and Hati chased the sun. Though it's widely considered that old Snorri Sturluson is kind of a hack on the level of Herodotus.
Okay.
He may have been making it up. So.
Okay. Ironically enough, again, this is sort of what the guy was talking about, like the wolf and the moon and whatever else.
Okay.
Is there, okay, I don't know if you like saw more, but there's a lot of wolf god thingies in Norse mythology, right? Like outside of just these two.
Yeah, so there's also the father of these two wolves is pretty big in Norse mythology. I don't know exactly. There is quite a bit of, you know, obviously cultures and civilizations, they take in what's around them. So, yeah, you know, up in the Great North, there's quite a bit of wolves up there. So,
well, it's I'm pretty sure it's either Odin's wolf or the wolf god that comes out during the Great Hunt or whatever that's called. And I think its name is Fenris. And
I did also read about that wolf as well. Yes.
I could be crazy, but I'm like, if you had probably a boy, excellent name for a son. I'm just going to say it. Fenris. Awesome.
Oh, that's
name.
A hell of a name. Yeah. Especially if you're living up in Minnesota. And there's a lot of, there's already a lot of, you know, Scandinavian, Norwegian, Finnish, you know, all, a lot of that culture up there already. That is a great name. It is kind of funny because they name their gods and their, you know, the wolves and everything, such cool names. And then they name their own kids Snorri Sturluson. Like, obviously the dad, you know, Sturlu, whatever his name was kind of a kind of a weird dude.
It's funny. I love to, and I think our listeners should do this. If you have a questionable name like Snorri, right? I guess this would be for the ladies. Imagine during coitus calling out that name. It's very unsexy. let's just leave it at that. If you're questioning a name, envision that scenario in your head, and if the name sounds like a turn off, it, you know, not a great name.
Who knows? I mean, for all we know, that name could have been like Kevin back then.
That is true.
You know?
That is like, very true.
They did have kind of a lot of their names passed on through, like, you know, Norman and all that stuff. So we do have a lot of names that they have, but I've never heard Snorri before. So that's pretty.
It sounds like sounds like a type of Pokemon.
All right. But moving on, what I actually thought at this point would really perk up your ears was something else, though, which I thought would trigger you was the word skull.
Yeah.
However, this is very different from the word associated with the Minnesota Vikings battle chant, skull, which comes from the Swedish, Danish, and Norwegian word for a community bowl that was filled with beer and shared amongst friends with a meaning much like the word cheers.
Yeah. Obviously, any unfortunate fans of the football club known as the Minnesota Vikings, the skull chant is very, very popular there. I was pretty sure I knew it meant cheers of some kind, but the beer part of it, they kind of leave that out. Although there is a lot of beer consumption during the skull chant at the stadium.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of beer consumption happening throughout that whole game. Now, in Norse mythology, it was believed that when Hati and Skull, which represents hate and mockery, respectively, caught up with the sun and moon, they would swallow them up, bringing the demise of the celestial beings in a never-ending period of darkness, which would be the triggering of Ragnarok, the Nordic end times, signaling the destruction of the universe and death of all life on each of the nine worlds.
Okay, first off, very metal. That is like the lore of that right there is amazing. Just badass as hell. The nine worlds, though, I don't know if I've ever heard of the nine worlds before.
So did you ever watch like the Thor movie or the Avengers movie?
Yeah.
How they kind of travel between worlds, and like there's the Earth world and the, you know, the world that Thor's from, the world that Loki's from, that kind of deal. It's all it's kind of like that.
So, okay. I see. Yeah. Cause there's like where Valhalla is.
Earth, Valhalla. Yeah.
And then I think Loki's like in an ice goblin world or some shit like that.
I'm not too huge into it, but I do remember the movies.
Okay. I mean, the good one we know is Valhalla. I think Hell is, it might just be called Helia or something like that. Or Helia is the demon of hell or the overlord or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not too huge into it. I did read just enough to write up these paragraphs and a little bit more. So, but yeah, I do know that in the movie, it was depicted like the Rainbow Road from Mario Kart was what connected yeah. them all.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And he put the sword in the thingy too, is right?
Like,
the key to make thingy. It. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, as you can imagine, eclipses, which we now know are normal and somewhat common occurrences, would surely scare the living hell out of believers in this myth. Now, in reaction to one of these celestial events, Norse men and women would make angry, loud noises in an attempt to intimidate and hopefully scare away Hati and Skoll, saving the sun and moon and preserving life in the entire universe. The funny thing is, shouting at these eclipses would actually seem to do the trick for someone with a real lack of knowledge of the phenomenon like they had back then, which is maybe why this action is so consistent around the world.
Okay, now we're right in the part. He told me this exact thing
okay.
about the eclipse. Like, the Vikings used to... The eclipse would come and they'd like bash their shields and yell at it. Yep. So the wolf god wouldn't destroy the world, which I guess, yeah, like you said, in their minds, they probably conquered the wolf god or whatever and stopped Ragnarok, which I guess is kind of maybe gives you a good feeling that you did something.
Yeah, it's time for a little, definitely. So the nerd corner here, there was an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where one of the characters, O'Brien, was actually brought down to the planet that Deep Space Nine was near, kind of to help. He was basically there to take the doctor to help out during a medical emergency. But the person that the doctor was supposed to help out was like the leader of the village. And every night, there like a cloud would approach and he would lead the villagers in like an angry like chant against the cloud. And then like the funny thing was it worked every night because that was supposed to be a thing that like unified against the, you know, it's supposed to be unifying them against the cloud, but it really like made it so that they were at peace with each other and not fighting. So it's kind of like this. Okay. It makes the entire village feel like they won.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to say for the next eclipse, definitely going to be yelling at it. I'll tell you that much. But did they in the episode of Star Trek, was it just a regular cloud that they thought was something more?
Oh no. If they didn't do it right, it would fuck them up.
Okay.
This is getting really deep into something stupid, but, basically O'Brien didn't do it very well the first time. He wasn't confident in himself, which made the villagers not confident in him. And then the cloud started fucking people up.
Okay. All right. Well, yep. Come on, O'Brien. You need a little bit of that Irish courage to get that, to battle that cloud.
Yeah, that was kind of his character was he's a big time Irish dude. So yeah, but moving on from that. That is your Star Trek corner of the week, though. So enjoy.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah.
This idea about the sun being swallowed up by celestial beings is just like shouting at eclipses, not all that uncommon amongst ancient mythologies, as there were apparently many societies throughout history and the world that believed that solar eclipses were some sort of heavenly event, much like in ancient China, where it was believed that witnessing a solar eclipse meant that a huge dragon was attempting to eat the sun. With a similar remedy being employed with loud shouting and banging of drums in an attempt to scare off the massive heavenly beast. Some of the oldest written records of a solar eclipse actually come from China, as evidence has been found written on the back of a tortoise shell dating back to about 1200 BCE, known as the Oracle Bones.
Wow. Jesus. Okay.
Yep.
you know, young Earth creationists are in shambles right now. But yeah, it's funny so far in these two stories that the same technique to scare a cat away is working with these gods trying to eat either the sun or the moon.
Oh, don't worry, it's coming. Don't worry, it's coming. So the oracle bones basically talked about like the darkness coming. And then on the other side of the tortoise shell, it talked about, you know, the villagers making loud noises to get the evil away kind of deal, to bring back the sun. So in short, you know, it's quite a bit more. But I was kind of surprised that a tortoise shell would last that long, though I suppose it would be easy, you know, to get the date, because supposedly they figured out like when this was from the carbon dating. So,
oh, okay. Again, yeah. Young Earth creationists in shambles. But
I think 6,000 years ago does fall into the timeline. So young Earth creationists might be okay. Save your emails for later when Jesus comes up.
I wonder if, okay, so if it was on the back of a tortoiseshell, obviously that's the, I felt like that maybe the inside of a turtle shell would have like a skin almost that you could, would be easier to like write on, you know?
Yeah.
But, because you think the back would be kind of a darker color, right? Unless they carved it in there, I guess.
I imagine, I'm thinking they carved it in there. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's still cool. Yeah. I mean, I wish I could just write notes on turtle shells, but unfortunately it's kind of cruel and unusual to just kill them to write somebody a post-it note.
Yeah, if you're going to kill a tortoise just to be able to write on the inside of its shell, make sure you make a nice soup out of it. Don't wait. Right. Be wasteful.
Exactly.
Now, also in China, it was said that a large black dog named Tiangu was thought, sorry if I butcher that, was thought to be attempting to eat the sun or possibly the moon during lunar eclipses. During these events, the royal astronomers were charged with banging drums and actually firing arrows at the moon or sun, making all sorts of noise as well to scare off this demonic dog, which went along kind of with the mythological dog story that gained immortality and chased its owner's wife, who also happened to be immortal, to the moon, kind of where she hid out. Kind of along the same, like, you know, in the same area, Vietnam had a creature that was similar, but depicted as a large frog that would swallow up the moon. In South American Andes, the sun was devoured by a puma, which I imagine was probably an ancient relative of Stinkfoot.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Stinkfoot was a demigod born from the South American puma.
Pure evil in spite. That's what it was born of.
I think it's really interesting how they are like use like known animals that are like, there's a god version of it that is consuming the moon or sun or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of so just kind of in my mind, well, here in my mind, I suppose, you know how the like the stars, they make those into constellations,
yeah,
to kind of tell their own stories, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I'm thinking it's kind of the same thing where they're using like pre-made gods, and then they're like, these celestial events happen and they're like, oh, you know who that is, that's the god that you already know, but he's actually eating the moon because his owner's wife is on that moon, you know what I mean? Like, remember when I told you that story? It's happening because of that, you know. Because when you're known for having the answers, and maybe that's what's keeping you fed, you need to have the fucking answers.
Yeah.
So like religion.
I was going to say, like, the people who initially, you know, exclaimed, oh, it's this god doing this, you know, in the bottom of their heart, they know they're telling a lie, but they are so confident they just say it, like you said, to keep either the congregation or keep themselves fed or, you know, yep, what have you.
It's just like that warranty salesman. They got to believe it themselves or they can't sell it. So,
very true.
Even if they don't actually believe it, they have to really, you know, they have to fake it till they fucking make it and like feel like they believe it to make you actually believe it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, very, very, very true.
if you half-heartedly beat those drums as a priest, then no one's going to believe in your other bullshit either. You've got to bang those fucking drums like you actually think that this is going to help and that that eclipse isn't just going to go away on its own.
I wonder what they would have done. Like, just think about this. You have a village. They don't do anything. It comes and, you know, 5 minutes later, it's gone. If they would have just waited a few minutes, they would have saw that it was probably just a natural thing or not some creature doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, I'm trying to remember if it's the Aztecs who had sacrifices every day so that the sun would rise again like the next day.
Yeah.
Kind of makes me think of the first Aztecs who, like, the Spanish stopped them from making those sacrifices. And the sun rose anyway the next day. You know what I mean?
And
the, oh, shit.
Yeah, they're all sitting there going, just like that, making the noise.
Yeah.
Yep, right there.
All right, moving on. Kind of, you know, a little different, but mostly the same. In Siberia, the Tartars actually believed that a vampire was attempting to eat the sun during a solar eclipse, though would have to spit it out after burning its tongue.
Ah, that dumb fucking vampire, man.
Yeah.
So
I imagine it's Triple H from Blade Trinity.
It's just like a little kid eating, like not knowing how hot their food is and just sticking it in their mouth. So it's interesting because obviously vampire legends come in all shapes depending on cultures. So I'm assuming the Russians here, the vampire must not have been like a blood-sucking thing, huh?
Well, I believe, so I don't know if they actually called it, the Tartars actually called them like...
A vampire?
Damn, because I'm trying to think of how close Transylvania and Siberia, they're decently close. I mean, obviously I'm... You know, not a fucking map expert, maybe, but they're pretty close. There was a shit ton of these, and I thought you would just like seeing the vampires.
I love
it. I'm trying to remember because Romania had its own ideas about what it was too, but it just wasn't that interesting. It kind of went along. That's the crazy thing, because when I saw a vampire, I immediately thought Romania, but it wasn't Romania. It was Siberia, the Tartars. Kind of the ancient enemy of the Russians, the Muscovy Russians and whatnot. So,
okay.
We talked about them during the Ivan the Terrible episode.
Yeah, I remember the Ivan the maybe not so terrible, right? Maybe made up how terrible he was.
Yeah, Ivan the not so bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but pretty much I imagine it was kind of what we think of like vampires. Maybe it wasn't exactly like the Hollywood version of vampires we have now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, like, I mean, a lot of cultures around the world, maybe not like the pale skin undead only travels at night vampire, but they have like some sort of creature that sucks your blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there was back when vampires started getting like really big, like you know how they go through ebbs and flows where different, you know, cryptids or ghosts or whatnots, witches, like get popular. I remember something about the history of vampires was the fear of people with like blood deficiencies, like iron deficiencies, that sort of thing. So kind of like the fear of sick people and making you sick as well.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure though. That might have been just some historian, you know, connecting fucking dots that really weren't, you know, Herodotus style. So
I finished Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I you know, you can send an email or not, but I'm almost positive he created the archetype for like the stereotypical vampire we talk about today. But
the modern vampire.
Yeah. Yes. But when you're, you know, reading the book, you're like, oh, this is very clearly referencing, I would say, Vlad the Impaler or like someone like him, because obviously they're in Transylvania and like it's a count and he has a castle and the people are known for battles and blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because that book was written in 1890, I think, or maybe 1889 or something like that. So very old book, but yeah, it's from what I understand, he created like the vampires we know today.
Yeah. And it, a lot of those kind of myths, I imagine, like a defense mechanism sort of deal possibly could. I'm obviously making, you know, fucking red strings out of dots too, but always in my mind, it kind of, whenever you hear about Vlad the Impaler and like the stories that they tell about him, in my mind, it's always kind of like that kid who doesn't want to be beaten up, kind of making it sound like they're a real badass. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's what it always kind of sounds like in my mind. But yeah. Now we're way a fucking off topic.
Well, we're kind of, because you talked about vampires, but that doesn't have nothing to do with eclipses technically, but continue on.
Yeah. I knew that would pump up the talking though. So it's a good thing to throw in there.
You cannot bring up vampires on this show or else we're just going to lose track of everything.
Yeah. You bring up a cryptid on the show and it's fucking off the rails pretty quick. next up though, another funny thing. The lands that would become the Southern United States were inhabited by the Choctaw peoples, and they actually believed that a massive, hungry black squirrel clung to and was nibbling on the sun, all with the same noisy remedy being prescribed to make the universe right again and scare away the weird little creature.
Yeah. Okay, so out of all these creatures, I actually think the squirrel is like the most logical because, you know, it's ball-shaped. It kind of looks like a walnut or something. Squirrels love that stuff. You know, maybe the only other thing better would be a mouse or a rat. But I like the squirrel one. I do like the squirrel one.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me think too, this, so a lot of these articles always make it seem like every single time these ancient people saw an eclipse, they always saw a total eclipse. They were always seeing the moon block out perfectly the sun. It's like, I imagine it's just like us, you know, it happens every once in a while, like where you're at. Yeah. More than likely, you're just going to see a tiny little nibble on, you know what I mean? Like if you would have actually been able to see it in Minnesota and I had stayed awake in Arizona, we would have only seen chunks out of it, you know?
Yeah. Not very much. Probably just like it getting darker, mostly. Mm-hmm. But so you're saying, like, if you have an eclipse where there's maybe it's not total and you can see like an edge sticking out, like to them, that's like the creature not completing the bite, just like biting a chunk out of it.
Yeah, with this belief, the squirrel kind of like taking nibbles out of it or chunks out of it.
Yeah.
That kind of goes along more with what I imagine most of, you know, just like us. Like, you're more likely, if you are around one, to see kind of like, you know, not the totality, but like a part of it. Yeah. I mean, think about back then. How many people actually traveled more than 50 miles away from where they were in their entire lives?
Not many.
Like, unless they were like a very wealthy noble who had something to do very far away, or they were a warrior who, you know, followed Alexander to the end of the fucking earth. Not very likely. So
no, absolutely not. I could just imagine them where they don't see like a total eclipse and they're like, oh, thank God that fucking squirrel didn't eat it all.
He left some for us.
Yes. Thank you, squirrel God. Thank you.
Shit, I was drunk and I slept right through it. Somebody must have yelled. Thanks, whoever that was.
Yeah.
Now, to get away from the sun-devouring myths of ancient religions, many civilizations actually believed that these natural occurrences were bad omens of things to come, with cultures coming up with creative means to cast off the evils that the eclipse was thought to have brought on. In the Incan Empire of modern-day South America, it was believed that a solar eclipse was a sign that the sun god Inti was angry at them. And after a solar eclipse, all of the priests would convene to decide what and how many sacrifices would need to be made to regain the god's approval. This would include human sacrifices, which wasn't actually all that common in Incan society, though a solar eclipse would have definitely been considered a break-the-glass moment for that society. the Emperor would also take a little bit of a leave of absence from public appearances after the event. He would even fast to appease the god Inti.
Okay. See, when you started this eclipse, this type of thing initially yep. is what I was expecting. Oh, this is a catastrophic event that's happening. The gods are mad about something. So, what? Okay, so on the sacrifices, I'm guessing you maybe go into it here, but were the Aztecs bigger on sacrifices than the Incas?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
If the Incas, it wasn't really, I mean, obviously, sacrifice, like non-human sacrifices, they would sacrifice, you know, other things like animals, grain, you know, prized possessions, maybe like on a smaller level. And then like the big sacrifice might be like the human sacrifice. Incans were nowhere near like Aztecs. Okay. Aztecs were, you know, they got it down to pretty much an assembly line or a disassembly line as far as like sacrificing goes.
They were the LA Lakers of human sacrifice.
I guess.
Yeah. Maybe the Yankees, maybe more the New York Yankees of human sacrifice.
Yeah, of gobbling up smaller teams' talent and just taking them out. Yep. Maybe in that term, not, yeah.
They're always on the top. They're always up there. They're the best of the best.
Yeah, I think it is kind of funny. They talk about the Emperor. Whenever there's a bad omen, kind of that he's not in control of, it makes it seem like he just kind of decides like, ooh, I'm going to stay out of the public. I'm going to stay away from any tomato throw. For the time being, kind of deal. Making him think like any little, you know, poor decision maybe that he made, people might think like, oh, here it is. God's pissed at him, you know.
I was just going to say, I bet he, you know, he thought, oh, I must have upset the god somehow. But but the way of him fixing it, you know, in rare circumstances for the Incas was, I'll just kill probably a lowly peasant or a virgin or whoever they decided.
Yeah, the wretch. We'll take them out. Or enemy prisoners of war. You know, I think that was kind of the Aztecs. They were not taking down their own people as much as they were taking down, like, captured, you know, enemies, that sort of thing. People from other lands, other tribe steals.
Gotcha, so, okay.
I didn't really learn... in my, you know, history classes, I didn't really take a ton of like Aztec history. So what I know from them is mostly from TV and movie.
Ancient aliens.
Thank you, ancient aliens. I was about to say.
Yeah.
Thank you, History Channel. Yeah, definitely. Some other ones I was reading about, actually the Assyrians. What they would do is after an eclipse, they would have their king abdicate for a short amount of time and have a peasant actually take his role as king, to make sure that none of the bad kind of omens surrounded the actual king after the eclipse. And then in order to, you know, someone who made such a great sacrifice like that, in order to thank them, you would, of course, like, kill that person once you had them forcibly abdicate and put your guy back in power.
Okay. Yeah, that's a bad deal for whoever got that job.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of that movie about, I forgot what the guy's name, when the Cubs were about to go to the playoffs and that guy accidentally got the ball away from the Cubs player who was about to catch it.
Yeah.
During that documentary, they talk about the ancient kind of idea of a scapegoat. Makes me think, like, it's almost like the same thing.
Yeah, so. It's like when a company does something really bad and then they usually fire a CEO. And then the new scapegoat comes in. He's like, oh, I'm going to fix everything. Stuff calms down. Then that guy disappears from the scene. And then they put in another one of the shills that will maximize profits for the shareholders.
Yeah, there was a movie, Jim Carrey was in it, called Fun with Dick and Jane.
Yeah.
And right before his company had this huge scandal come out that destroyed the company, basically they made him the executive vice president of communications,
whatever,
and they had him going on the news while the story broke, and
it's not,
it basically destroyed his career.
It's not uncommon, like, when I was at Best Buy, and they were kind of getting in hot water for something, man, they were just like, every year there'd be two new CEOs. Get them in there, spit them out. Get them in there, spit them out.
Yeah. While the people actually running the company, the chairman and the board go on unscathed.
Yeah.
Much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, speaking of human sacrifice, Paul Griffin, an archaeoastronomer, actually believes that petroglyphs found on large stones in Lough Cru Megalith Monument in Ireland, these ones known as C16 in Carn L, apparently there's like over 30 of these giant megaliths kind of structures, could actually be the earliest depictions of a solar eclipse. Now, the carvings, which have features of two spiraling circles converging upon one another, are thought by Griffin to depict a total solar eclipse that had happened in the region on November 30th, 3340 BCE. This would actually line up perfectly kind of with the time that these monument structures were actually made. Griffin believes that the burnt remains of 50 people near the carvings were Neolithic sacrifices made during this solar event. Though I should say other specialists in the area of like Neolithic kind of archaeology, Irish archaeology, claim that those spirals found on the stones are very common glyphs for the time, and that Stone Age people in general would use, you know, these big spiraling circles. And the claims are mostly basis.
I thought you were going to, when I heard Irish, I was going to be like, is this going to be the sober God is eating the sun if we don't quit drinking so much? But okay. Is this, this rock here, the kind of inscriptions?
Yes.
Or what he's thinking?
So this is kind of where, obviously you guys can't see this. So basically it's one large kind of like spiral, big circle with another circle kind of like coming into it. So he's making it seem like, oh, this is evidence that it was an eclipse, when really, you know, it's just kind of one circle that's kind of like half consuming, half being consumed by a smaller circle.
Yeah, I can see where he's coming from, obviously, but with all the other circles on there, it kind of feels like this might mean something else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Ancient aliens would probably say that this was the ancient people knowing about the Earth and another planet like impacting, like Nibiru or something like that.
Yeah.
I imagine when I first saw this, I thought immediately, what would the wild haired man from Ancient Aliens think of this? And aliens, of course, popped up. But even that one right there kind of looks like an alien. Upper left hand corner of the circle kind of looks like ET's face there a little bit. So
you know what this looks like to me? This looks like when a little kid first tries to draw like a flower of some kind, and they can't quite get the petals to be straight around it, and they're just kind of like thrown everywhere.
And then they get bored, like lose focus, and, you know, fuck off after a little while, and you get this.
Yeah. Maybe this is a...
now you have to put that on the fridge for a month. Great.
Maybe this is a drunk Irishman's flower drawing.
Potentially. I don't know if they had beer back in the Stone Age. This would have been a really fucking long time ago. So, well, 3340, you are actually starting to impede on fucking young Earth creationists if you're getting into 3340, because that was over 5,000 years ago.
Yeah,
so you're getting up there.
They probably think a fucking dinosaur drew this, but so technically, couldn't they track and see if an eclipse would have happened this long ago on this day?
That is why there's a date.
Okay.
Because they are able to look at the sun's movement and track eclipses like way, way back and way, way forward. Now, I'm obviously not an expert on any of this, but all of that, you know, it all stays pretty constant, you know, all of the orbits and everything like that. So you can predict with, you know, pretty decent, certainly, like when and like where the totality of eclipses are going to be.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I heard on, I think, the radio that they, in the 60s, I think, when there's the last really big one, they had predicted that the one was going to happen again this year. So, and obviously technology has advanced quite a bit since then. So if they could tell back then, I'm sure they can certainly model what, when it's going to happen quite far in the future and in the past.
Yeah, they, so I'm going to talk about when it is supposedly thought that the first predicted eclipse happened.
Okay.
It's actually kind of famous. It's named after the guy who is thought to have predicted it. But yeah, so during like the scientific revolution, they started getting like really good at predicting like when they were going to happen. And then they got better and better. And then they were able to look back in the history and look forward to figure out like when they had happened and when they will happen. But it was like the Chinese were able to do it like at the, I think at the turn of the like first, you know, like basically like 200 AD, I think they were able to do it pretty well to predict, you know, if a eclipse was coming up pretty soon. And then, you know, the everybody kind of got better at it and better at it. And then everyone, dark ages happened. Everyone kind of went to shit. So maybe the Chinese might have been the only ones who actually kept that ability. But yeah, obviously the Aztecs, you know, hit hard times when the Europeans came.
Yeah.
Religion, organized religion, hit the science community of Europe pretty bad.
Hard. Yeah.
Muslims hit the, you know, Near East, all of their scientists pretty bad. So I do, it's, you know, it goes away and comes back maybe. But yeah, we're pretty good at it now. So.
Okay.
Now, speaking of Christianity, in an effort to equally tie in all of the ancient myth, next up, during the supposed crucifixion of the allegedly real Jesus, the Gospel of Luke account states, "And the sun was darkened." And this is kind of in relation to when Jesus was crucified. Some historians have tried to tie this darkness into one of two solar eclipses that actually happened during this time. The first, named the Eclipse of Phlegon, for the Greek historian who wrote an account of it, lasted under 2 minutes and occurred on November 24th, CE 29. Though the sun was only about 80% covered in the area of Jerusalem known as Judea, falling out of the zone of totality. Also in contention, though, a later eclipse, which occurred on March 19th, 33 CE, did occur. However, this eclipse was too far away from the region to be able to see it. Also, neither of these two eclipses really could have explained the supposed 3 hours of darkness that had allegedly occurred on that day. And for anyone who doesn't know, BCE is the years like before zero, and CE is after zero. So before the Common Era and then the Common Era, which we are in right now.
So, okay. So the if we take the Bible's account, right, and Easter generally is, what, in the end of March, beginning of April, which is allegedly when he died, and 33, so, but he was supposed to have been killed at 31, right?
No, I think he was supposed to be killed, so that's kind of why I think they like the second eclipse, is because it's closer to Easter. And 33, he was supposed to be 33 when he died, and they love to say that he was born like during like zero, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we learned that all growing up in that Catholic church, that's what we learned, was that like BC was before Christ and AD was supposed to be after death, even though there's 33 years in between those two points.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah. Was he 33? I thought it was 31.
33.
Okay.
Is well, yeah, it's supposed to be.
I will.
How many 33-year-olds do you know that you'd follow around, though? I don't know very many.
No, I can't. At my age, I can't say a single one. But yeah, I will say that's a little weird as far as like lining up the time, but. You also said they wouldn't even be able to see the eclipse based on where they were.
Yeah, where that line of totality was supposed to have been, they said that you really wouldn't have seen much from like the area of Jerusalem. So I think they mostly like it because of the date.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is a weird lineup, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe that it could be an interesting theory that if they chose that date, right, and they were writing the story in a location that it was visible.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe they weren't in Jerusalem, but they wrote the story of the Bible somewhere else where it did happen and put that in there. I mean, I guess, but I guess we'd have to see where the hell exactly it traveled during that day, you know?
Yeah, you do have to remember that there have been hundreds of years of changes to these stories.
Yeah.
I mean, Christianity has very much molded from the religions that it has taken in. So there's a lot of pagan shit. If you don't think Christianity has anything to do with pagans, you are sorely mistaken. basically, you know, Jesus's birthday was lined up for all of the, you know, all the sun gods that they soaked up. Basically, it was, you know, melded into that. And then having the whole, you know, it happening like during Passover thing, I'm not exactly sure because I know there's supposed to be a significance of like the Passover dinner and the Last Supper type deal. But yeah, it just, it all, you know, they had time to line it up and, you know, not really have people notice the changes, maybe, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well,
especially when you weren't allowed to read the Bible if you were just a commoner, you know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, anybody, I mean, I shouldn't say anybody, but if you really look at, especially the Roman celebrations, and then you overlap them with now Christian celebrations or even modern celebrated days, they are almost exactly parallel to what they... So it was almost like the best way to snuff out their religion was by overlaying this new one on top of it, calling it something different.
You're not going to sell your religion for get rid of shit that already liked about
older religion. Yeah.
You gotta pack that shit in. You can't. Now, next up, the death of the Muslim prophet Muhammad's son Ibrahim supposedly corresponded with a solar eclipse, which occurred on, they think that it's from this one, January 27th, 632 CE, as mentioned in the Quran. And just like I said before, 632 CE is like after zero.
Yep.
So like 1400 years ago. So,
yep.
Quote, on the day of Ibrahim's death, the sun eclipsed and the people said that the eclipse was due to the death of Ibrahim, the son of the prophet. Now, though, apparently, I guess Muhammad really didn't believe that solar eclipses were actually any kind of like sign from God of, you know, life or death. As the next line states, Allah's apostle said, the sun and the moon are two signs amongst the signs of Allah. They do not eclipse because of someone's death or life. So when you see them, invoke Allah and pray till the eclipse is clear.
Okay, well, at least that don't take long, 2 minutes, and then that's all the praying you got to do. But okay, I don't know that much about, you know, the Islamic religion, but I swore I heard Muhammad rode his flying horse and cut the moon in two or something, right?
I don't know about that
one. I'm pretty sure I've heard that before, but here's the thing. There, a lot of religions have like the god or their prophet doing something to either the sun or the moon, so it's not that weird. But
I think it was Muhammad was like he ascended to heaven. Was that what you're talking about? Like,
no. Well, you know, Muhammad had a flying horse. I know that's in there.
And, okay. And I didn't realize that. I didn't see that episode of South Park. No.
No, in there, he has a flying horse or flying something. I'm pretty sure it's a horse. Okay. But yeah, I swore it was something like he destroyed the moon or cut the moon or like something like that. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it's interesting that they correlated that to his son's death, but also he said that the eclipses don't mean anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, the eclipse was like a big event that was happening. Everyone saw it that day, and it happened to, I guess, be on the day that his son died. So he kind of basically said, like, no, don't worry, you know, it's not some big omen or some big sign or anything like that. He also, though, I mean, think of a shyster having to cover his tracks. He may have also just kind of been like covering, you know, like, oh, whoa, this has been planned for, don't worry about it, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I guess, yeah. I wonder why he would downplay it though, instead of like leaning using into it. Yeah.
Yeah. You would think he would like lean into it. Most religious, you know, like the big icons. I mean, David Miscavige would definitely lean into it.
Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure when his son dies on the eclipse, he's going to really galvanize religion.
After he slaps his son to death or something like that. So, kind of dealing with Muhammad and eclipses, his birth was supposedly preceded by a solar eclipse. This occurred on the 24th of November, 569 CE, with the path of the eclipse being just south of Mecca. He would actually be born the next year in Mecca on the 29th of August, 570 CE, which is about 9 months. So it's a little weird.
Okay. All right. So his parents fucked on a solar eclipse and then he was born 9 months later.
Potentially. Yeah. Huh. Who knows?
Okay.
I thought it was kind of weird because those dates line up a little. So
hey,
it didn't really mention the conception. It just mentioned like, oh yeah, his birth was preceded by this. And then you look at the dates, you're like, wow, that's like 9 months. That's pretty, it's pretty close.
Well, I guess it would make sense why he rode his horse up there then. Could be where he was coming from. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'll say this, Muhammad stuff and I guess even the Jesus stuff is kind of interesting. The dates lining up. So, you know what?
Yeah.
This is now a Christian and Islam friendly podcast. We can't do the show anymore.
So some more kind of historical eclipses that happened throughout history. The first one being the death of King Henry I of England is actually connected to one famous eclipse, which occurred on the 2nd of August, 1133. However, King Henry didn't actually die until December 1135. Nevertheless, stories about the eclipse coinciding with the civil unrest that occurred after his death kind of flourished, really. In the manuscript Historia Novella, William of Malmesbury recounts that the hideous darkness agitated the hearts of men. After the death of the king, a struggle for the throne threw the kingdom into chaos and civil war.
Huh. I wonder if this is where the term novella came from.
Novella is kind of like
an old term.
Well, no, technically it's still used.
Yeah.
So it's like like how a novel is big, like a novella is small.
Oh, I didn't even know there's a classification, but I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. There, so, I forgot. I mean, I used to know it when I was, taking writing classes back in college. There's short story, I believe there's novella and novel.
Novelette
is just slightly bigger than a short story, and novella is kind of like, remember those books that we read when we were kids to get the Pizza Hut points to get you would read the short ones.
Yeah,
those were like novellas.
Like Goosebumps.
Goosebumps might be because of the big words, actually. Yeah, those might be novellas. I used to stack those for the fucking the personal pan pizzas. But they need to bring that back.
So,
but for adults, that would be great.
So, obviously, I know who King Henry is, but William of Malmesbury, is this just like a historian at the time kind of guy?
Well, he's like a later writer.
He
wrote about it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to definitely start calling an eclipse a hideous darkness, because that is fucking badass.
Yeah, that would be. I was thinking, like, watching all those, like the YouTube videos and the Instagram little short videos of people like during the eclipse, it'd be great to see someone out there like banging drums or firing arrows into the sky.
This is America firing their guns at it.
Oh yeah, you have to fire your gun. Yeah. It did go through like Tennessee or something like that. So maybe that happened.
Yeah, it did. It went through a good chunk of the South.
Yeah. Texas. Oh fuck. No, it went through Texas. Yeah, they were firing their gun.
Texas, Arkansas, I'm pretty sure Kentucky and Tennessee kind of arced over that way.
Yeah, there were when I was living out in New Mexico, there were so many Texans out there. Every time the Cowboys game was on, you could always tell when it was done because you would hear the guns firing, but you could never tell if they were being fired in anger or celebration. You had to tune into ESPN to figure that out.
The citizens of Alabama were saying, "Quick, kiss your sister, make the sun go back."
They'll use any excuse.
Yeah.
All right, next up. According to the Greek philosopher Herodotus, who comes up again, an eclipse actually stopped an in-progress battle between the Medes and the Lydians, which occurred in modern-day Turkey, known then as Anatolia, which would lead to both sides actually suing for peace and ending the near 6-year-old conflict between the two sides. Crazy enough, modern-day astronomers have even been able to narrow down the actual date of this battle because of a solar event that went directly through where Turkey is now. They even think that they may have figured out where the battle is because it's pretty well known where the ancient homelands of the Medes and the Lydians were and where the area is that they were fighting over. They think it happened along a river that bordered the two nations. This occurred on May 25th, 585 BCE. And it was
Okay.
known as the Eclipse of Thales.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's pretty cool though that they could narrow it down to that. I mean, it might sound a little far-fetched on the surface, but if you're in battle and this shit happens, I would imagine they might be like, "Oh, this must be a sign from a higher power signifying something."
Yeah, also too, I can imagine if you're in the middle of a 6-year war and it's just not going anywhere, maybe they just took any sign they could as a good excuse.
Yeah, that is.
Let's cut this relationship short. None of us are too excited about fucking anymore.
Yeah, I don't. All the blood and guts everywhere. I'm sure they were like, "Yeah, let's just. Why are we here? Just stop there. Why are we here, fellas? Why don't we just go home and, do whatever we do at home?"
This accomplishes nothing. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
Just like I said before, though, it is Herodotus. So Herodotus, more of a storyteller than a historian. We like to think of him more as a historian. Really, though, like kind of more of a the most popular bard in history. But I mean, what he, the stories he tell is taken from oral traditions. So it's that sort of thing. It is kind of cool that they could take what he told us and take it with kind of like what we know now about kind of the celestial event kind of deal that he wrote about and kind of like mix it together, like, breadcrumbs through history kind of deal.
He's like the old timey, he's the original Hunter S. Thompson, kind of. There's shreds of truth in there, but a lot of it is bullshit.
Yeah, same amount of sex probably, just change out wine for speed and mescaline.
Very true.
Yeah, now also, this eclipse may hold a great amount of scientific significance as well, as Herodotus wrote that the philosopher Thales of Miletus had actually predicted the occurrence of this eclipse before it occurred, giving the eclipse its name. Though many historians actually doubt that Greeks during this time would have had the astronomical know-how or expertise to accurately predict an eclipse path and the exact date where it would occur at that time. This was hundreds of years before the Chinese were able to figure it out, thousands of years before we were able to like accurately model, all of like the past and the future eclipses. So
maybe this this guy was just a friend of Herodotus's and slipped him a few dollars and said, "Hey, can you just talk me up in your little tale here?"
Yeah, potentially. Or a lot of times too. So the thing is, Herodotus lived like years after these people, sort of deal. Oh. So he's talking about past events, oral traditions passed down. So he might have mixed different traditions. So who knows, really? You know, he's gotcha. Basically he's trying to tell you the best story, and it's a very Greek heavy, pro Greek point of view kind of deal.
Okay.
So you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No surprise that one of their great historical philosophers from maybe a couple hundred years ago also is even better. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I listened to the Dan Carlin. He had a weird boner for this guy. So yeah, I was whenever I hear this guy's name now, I just can't unplug Dan Carlin talking about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know if he still actually makes podcasts, or I don't think he makes free ones anymore. That's the thing.
Ah,
I think
okay.
You have to pay for it.
Yeah,
I know he does write books though, so
I mean, yeah, it'd be a better source of income, I suppose.
Oh, well, I mean, he had such a popular podcast, but it came out so sporadically. You never knew when it was going to come out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It was very true. Very, very true.
But I mean, they were epic. So I can imagine why it took 6 months to make them.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of ends a little bit of the history side of it. Now we get to kind of, make fun of the modern day, all of the people who maybe we've seen on Instagram and YouTube. So we can start with that. Let's start out with flat earthers. So
yeah, I was kind of wondering about this the whole time, because technically should an eclipse happen under their philosophies?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. So they've been oddly kind of quiet. Like I've been looking through the internet kind of like what they believe about this, because I'm pretty sure that they believe what is that? The Fermion or something like that. The dome that surrounds the earth, like the sun and the moon kind of like are like above that. And they just kind of like hang around.
Well, I think that they believe everything orbits around the earth. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Like the earth center and the flat earth, everything goes around it.
Okay. See, we might be watching different YouTubers potentially, because the YouTube videos that I had seen was the sun and the moon just kind of basically made circles around the big dome up, you know, that made up that held our atmosphere, you know, because gravity doesn't exist. So it's a dome that holds in our atmosphere.
Under that philosophy, though, wouldn't that mean there'd probably be more eclipses happening?
You would think. It's kind of funny. I was actually watching a thing of eclipses actually occur, like the science behind it. Everyone kind of thinks that the moon has this very circular orbit around the earth. One of the things I actually remember when I was in college, someone was asking kind of like, why don't eclipses happen more often? This was, there was a big lunar eclipse that happened when I was at UNI back in maybe 2006 or 7. I remember because they kind of thought that the earth was and the moon were lined up on the solar plane, and that the moon basically should just kind of always be in front of the earth. Apparently, there like the moon has like a decently big like elliptical orbit. So it only happens when the moon and the earth are like close to each other. And also too, the earth is tilted,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it doesn't occur as much as you would think it would if the like moon's orbit was completely circular.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Well, from what I've seen on modern tellings of like the orbits of all the planets and everything, it's not necessarily like sun, everything spinning around it, right? It's more like a spiral, Like,
how they travel through space.
Yes. So yeah. If it's in a spiral pattern and they're all kind of spinning in different ways, right? That would make it much more rare when they perfectly line up. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's basically what I'm just trying to say is it's like as you might think, because yeah. When we were in, well, I mean, obviously Catholic school science class isn't going to be the greatest. They made it seem like the moon was orbiting just a few miles away from the Earth, and it was, you know, very circular.
Yeah.
All of the models that we saw were, honestly, I'm a little surprised that they didn't have a fucking geocentric fucking model of the solar system for, well, call it the solar system, you know, but
yeah.
I'm surprised it wasn't geocentric, the model that they had, considering, you know, what our science teacher was allowed to talk, like, tell us. You would always have to hear, like, you would hear our science teacher, Miss Beck. She would always have to like shut up or like silence herself, like when she was about to tell us too much.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't know too much. Damn it. It's not in the Bible.
Or she would say, but of course God created everything and all the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and then
she would go on with telling us the truth. That was kind of.
So basically what you're saying is the person asking the question maybe wasn't aware that it's not as simple as the moon just simply spinning around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what I was getting to a little bit also was I didn't realize at the time, because in my mind, the moon like perfectly circled the Earth was the deal.
Ah.
So I really didn't know how it worked either. But since there's all this shit about the like eclipses now, I actually figured out that the moon has a like a wider orbit and it's not so circular. So when it goes like very far out, very slowly, and then comes back in and speeds up, that's kind of like when it comes back in and is closer to us, that's when it, you know, that's when we have eclipses, basically.
Yeah. Well, you'd think whatever government put the moon up there would have got a more straight circular pattern, but you know what? It was a long time ago.
If you want to know the mechanics more about eclipses, we do talk a little bit about it way back in episode. Get ready for this. Episode 11.
Whoa.
Hollow moon theory.
Holy
about five
shit.
Years ago now. So been
that,
a minute.
That feels like a million years ago. Holy fuck. Jesus.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was like in the hundreds. I couldn't believe it was the episode after we talked about, what was episode 10? Goddamn reptilians or something like that.
Yeah.
It was our third most popular episode of all time is reptilians. And that one was right after it. So it's crazy. But
I know. God, that was forever ago. I think you were actually visiting here when we recorded that too.
Yes. Yep. I was. It was either that one. And then I think all we did Saturn at your house too.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right. That sounds right. Ooh, the memories, man. Well, we've been going for a while here. That was some splendid information on the eclipse. Very timely, being that the eclipse technically is, what, 2 days ago for us? But excellent legends throughout history. A lot of information. I'm pretty sure people probably aren't going to know all the different cultures and how they handle the eclipse. But if you want to contact us and let us know, especially if you were actually like in an area where it blacked out, where can they contact us, Phil?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're doing this with perfect timing for everyone to be sick of eclipses by the time this comes out. But if you want to hit us up, let us know about your experience or maybe what you learned this week, get a hold of us at subliminaldpodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear everything, you know, the good, the bad. If you have episode ideas, we love to hear those. Probably an even easier way to get a hold of us is through Instagram, Subliminal Deception Podcast. On IG, go ahead, same thing, all the likes, the shares, just everything, you know, get a hold of us. Cody also has an Instagram that he uses. What's that, Cody?
Yeah, you can follow me at Cody's Above. Give me a follow, send me a comment, whatever you'd like to do. The last thing we ask you guys to do is log on to iTunes, leave a show 5-star review. Doesn't particularly matter what you type in the box, type something, hit 5 stars, hit submit, all you gotta do. Thank you to those who've taken the time to do that. If you're a Spotify listener, it's even easier. You just hit 5 stars, hit submit, and you are all done. And thank you guys for doing that for us as well. Well, guys, excellent episode, Phil. I love historical information about kooky belief systems. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.